Scott to Sports Talk Chicago's 40th podcast. My name is John Zagluel, and I'm in today's driver's seat as we talk about the biggest stories in Chicago sports. We'll be looking at the Chicago Cubs, plus an injury update on Yu Darvish, the White Sox, and Michael Kopech's impending debut, plus some Chicago Bulls and Chicago Blackhawks news. Also, later in the show, we'll have a special guest on, and we'll be talking to him about his amazing golfing career. Before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, and on Twitter at John Z Sports. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Moochie World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. The Thunderbolts' last home game of the year is on August 25th. Purchase tickets right now at 708-489-BALL. That's 708-489-2255 to purchase tickets to their last home game of the 2018 season. Well, today we start with yet another piece of news to the ever-growing Yu Darvish saga. Darvish was in Single-A South Bend, starting his rehab assignment en route to a possible return in September for the Cubs. But that entire plan went out the window yesterday when Darvish, after just one inning and 19 pitches, requested that he be removed from the game and also requested a personal MRI. Here's what Darvish had to say through an interpreter about what happened. Quote, "During the warm-up of the next inning, I felt something in there. Last time, even though I did feel the same thing, I continued to throw. This time, I just stopped it here." Wow, I mean, I just don't even know where to begin here. Let's start with Darvish himself even getting this contract from the Cubs. Now, Darvish was a highly touted pitching prospect from Japan. And when he came to the MLB, he did all right in his rookie season, pitching to an ERA just under 4 with 16 wins. The 2013 season was his only elite season in Major League Baseball. That year, he finished second for the AL Cy Young. But since that year, he has consistently been getting worse. His ERA has risen every year until this year, and now it's topped out at 4.95 in limited time with the Cubs. So my question is, when looking at his decline and the fact that he's 32 years old, why in the world would the Cubs offer a 6-year, $126 million contract to him? Let's put it this way. The Cubs did not want to re-sign Jake Arrieta. One, because they could tell he was declining. He wasn't like his Cy Young self from 2015, in which he won 22 games. He still was a serviceable pitcher, but not that same guy. So the Cubs determined, why pay him $25 million a year? But instead, they turn around and, unbeknownst to themselves, sign a player just like Arrieta, who's aging quickly, who's on a decline, and who, in my opinion, has very little chance of improvement. I mean, even from a durability standpoint, I still don't understand why the Cubs signed him. Darvish has only pitched 200 innings in a season on one occasion, and that was the year he finished second in the Cy Young Award voting. Every other year, whether it be because of injuries or poor performance, the fact that he can't get out of the fifth inning in most games, he didn't pitch to 200 innings. Wouldn't you want to invest your money in a pitcher you know can give you 6 strong innings? Not a guy who can barely stay on the field, and when he is on the field, he can't even last 5. Now, going to Darvish's current injury situation, I have to say he is handling this poorly. By pulling yourself out of a game and then claiming, "I need a personal MRI," from a PR standpoint, that doesn't look that good. And I know for a fact that Cubs fans are very furious about this. I talked to a couple the other day who told me, what's even the point right now? Why did the Cubs even waste their time with him in the first place? Look, all I have to say is that in retrospect, it really made no sense for the Cubs to go after Darvish. Based on what I said at least, He's been on the decline, he's only getting older, and now with this injury, who knows if he'll even come back to the field in 2018. This was a colossal waste of money for the Cubs, and instead of having a bona fide starting pitcher to help anchor the rotation, they're left scrambling to use guys like Mike Montgomery while being forced to make trades mid-season, like with the acquisition of Cole Hamels. And when you think about it, Darvish is actually costing the Cubs more money than his $25 million price tag per season, because now that he's doing bad, the Cubs had to go get Cole Hamels, and the Cubs are on the hook for a $20 million option come next year. So because of Darvish getting hurt, the Cubs are spending nearly double on starting pitching, while still having to pay Darvish as he sits on the bench. Right now, Yu Darvish is reminding me of another Cubs pitcher, a guy who was good for one season, then his career came tumultuously crashing down. That guy being Mark Pryor. Pryor had one good year, then kept getting hurt, and every time there'd be a rehab assignment or a chance to get better, he'd want to wait it out and receive more tests. Well, Darvish is taking a page out of Pryor's book. And if I know Cubs fans like I do, they're not going to appreciate this blast from the past. Moving to the hard court, it's now time for some Chicago Bulls news. Recently, the schedules were released for every NBA team for the upcoming 2018-19 season, and the Bulls are already making history. The NBA announced that the Bulls will face the Orlando Magic in Mexico City on December 13th at the Arena Ciudad de México. This game will mark the first time that the Bulls have played a regular season game outside of the United States or Canada. Here's a statement from Bulls president and COO Michael Reinsdorf. Quote, "We are honored that the NBA invited the Chicago Bulls to be a part of sharing a game we love with a global audience. While our hometown is Chicago, the Bulls are fortunate to have fans around the world, and we are excited to take our team on the road and help bring the NBA game experience to Mexico City. On behalf of the entire organization, I want to thank Adam Silver, the NBA, and Mexico City for this opportunity." In other scheduling news, the Bulls are facing the Philadelphia 76ers to open the season on October 18th. Now, what's interesting about this game is that it'll be nationally televised on TNT. So the Bulls now getting some national recognition as the 2018-19 season opens up. Personally speaking, I don't really understand why the NBA wants to publicize the Bulls once again. I mean, I'm not looking forward to this year. I don't think the Bulls have what it takes yet to become a contender. They're still rebuilding. This is technically only the second year of the rebuild. But either way, maybe the NBA sees something that I don't, because the Bulls are getting some more recognition starting on opening night. In other news, the Bulls have signed Derek Walton Jr. to a two-way deal. Walton last year played with the Miami Heat and in 16 games averaged 1.8 points, 1 rebound, and 1 assist in 9.2 minutes per game. He went to the University of Michigan and was an All-Big Ten second team member in 2016-17. Remember, the Bulls had an extra two-way contract to give out since they signed Ryan Arcidiacono to a fully guaranteed deal. He was on a two-way last year. So with that opportunity present, the Bulls decided to go after Walton and signed him to a minimal deal. We move now to some Chicago Blackhawks news. There's been some controversy today about the Blackhawks as the NHL Network's Top Wings for 2018 list was released, and Patrick Kane was ranked as the fourth best wing in the National Hockey League behind Taylor Hall, Alex Ovechkin, and Nikita Kucherov. Now, I know this might not be the opinion that you want to hear, but I feel that the NHL Network's assessment is correct. Patrick Kane is not the number one wing. I think number four suits him very well, looking at stats at least. Kane last year scored 76 points off of 27 goals and 49 assists. Now, going to Taylor Hall, who's ranked number 3, last year he scored 93 points with 39 goals and 54 assists. His plus-minus was a plus 14. Patrick Kane's was a negative 20. And in fact, Patrick Kane owns the lowest plus-minus of anyone in the top four on that list. He's the only one with a negative number. Kucherov, the number one ranked wing, scored 100 points last year and made the number one All-Star team. And Alexander Ovechkin last year won the Maurice Richard Trophy because he led the league in goals. Actually, when comparing those top three players to Kane, it's a wonder itself that Kane is even up there, because last year, he kind of had a down season compared to the top three. Now, in all fairness to Kane, the top three players all made the playoffs last season with their respective teams. Kane, over here in Chicago, had nothing to play for. Maybe he wasn't as motivated as in years past to really perform, which is very understandable. With all of that in mind, I feel that the NHL Network got this one correct. You can't sit there and say that, oh, he had a down year because he was on a bad team. The point is, he still had a down year and has a lot to improve upon come this season. As for the top three, they rightfully belong there. And Kane rightfully belongs where he is now, the number four wing in the National Hockey League. Moving to the south side, it's now time to talk about some Chicago White Sox news. And today's a big day at Guaranteed Rate Field, as Sox top prospect Michael Kopech makes his major league debut. Now, although Kopech is highly touted, he's had some troubles in AAA Charlotte, going 7-7 with a 3.70 ERA. Now, his last six starts, however, have been quite good, a 1.89 ERA and a WHIP under 1.00. Currently, he also leads all minor league pitchers in strikeouts with 170 in 126 innings pitched. That's quite impressive, and it serves as no surprise to me, considering that he hits 100 miles per hour on the gun almost regularly. I mean, think about it this way. This is like an Aroldis Chapman, only in the starting rotation. So Kopech has lots of potential, and it'll be interesting to see how he does in a White Sox uniform. And I have to say, if you're a Sox fan right now, you've got to be excited for the future. Now you're seeing all of the Sox hard work, organizationally, coming together and being Major League ready. I mean, when the Sox got rid of Chris Sale, sure, there was some resentment, and there were people who weren't happy about getting rid of the club's best pitcher. But you know what? The Sox got a nice haul of prospects, and now Michael Kopech is ready to make his debut. So if you're wondering what to expect from Kopech, here's a scouting report from ChicagoNow.com. Quote, Kopech's arsenal is built around the aforementioned fastball, which he will go triple digits with, but sits comfortably in the 95 to 99 mile per hour range. Despite the outstanding velocity, Kopech features an easy delivery with no major mechanical red flags to speak of. Beyond the fastball, Kopech features two raw but promising secondary pitches that project plus. He can throw an 86 to 90 mile per hour slider and a 91 to 93 mile per hour changeup. And that's why he was down in the minors for so long, because he needed to develop a secondary pitch. There's no way he can come up to the majors and throw 99 and expect to get everyone out. Newsflash, hitters are good in the major leagues. They can time that up easily and knock him around all night. The Sox did their due diligence, allowed him to produce and perfect his off-speed pitches. And now we'll see the culmination of his efforts, as he debuts tonight for the Sox at 7 o'clock p.m. I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to seeing how he does in his first taste of Major League action. And before we get to our interview, we have some breaking news fresh off the presses. The Chicago Cubs have acquired Daniel Murphy from the Washington Nationals in exchange for a prospect and cash considerations. This is a bombshell of a report for the Cubs, and it's interesting that they went after an old foe. You may remember in 2015, the NLCS, when Daniel Murphy wreaked havoc on Cubs pitching, hitting so many home runs and leading the Mets to the World Series. Now, Murphy this season has been hurt, but when he's been in, he's done okay, above average at least from an offensive standpoint, hitting .300 with an OPS just under .800. Now, that's a far cry from 2016 and 2017. In 2016, he hit .347 and finished second in the NL MVP voting. And last year, he hit .322 with 23 home runs. So Murphy is not the Murphy of old, but he's still doing well. He's still hitting the ball, putting it in play, and hitting for a high average. He's definitely someone who can make a difference for the Cubs down the stretch. The one thing that I found interesting about the trade is that the Cubs didn't give up much, which is good for them. The Nationals must have really wanted to get rid of that salary because they got rid of Murphy and got one prospect and cash considerations back. From a talent standpoint, that's extremely uneven. So for the Cubs, although they're taking on a higher financial risk, they did get Daniel Murphy. They gave up practically nothing, and they know that he will contribute for them come September and October. And with that, it's time for our special guest. He became a member of the PGA Tour in 1989. By 1992, he had won his first tournament, shooting an impressive 16 under par. After seven more tournament victories, he became a part of the Champions Tour. And in 2009, he won the U.S. Senior Open, cruising to a five-stroke victory. Today, he continues to golf for the PGA Tour and Champions Tour while being an ambassador for Stryker Orthopedics. Please welcome Fred Funk to the show. Fred, how are you doing today, and thank you for being here on the show.
My pleasure. Doing good.
Well, Fred, you've had quite the career in golf. I mean, you've got three major championships and a total of 17 tournament wins to your name. Now, what baffles me is that when you started your golfing career in college, you were cut from the team originally. What happened, and how'd you flip the script on your career?
I didn't know you had that fact. That's a little factoid that not many people know, that I didn't make the team. But, I didn't make the team, and it was actually my home golf course. But I made a 12 on a par 3 that last round of qualifying, and that didn't fly too well in the total score. So I didn't make the team, but I just kept working at it and just got better.
Now, what's interesting is that you played in a few tour events starting in 1982 after you made the college team when you tried out again, yet you didn't become a member until 1989. How difficult was it for you to end up making the tour permanently and proving that you belonged there?
Well, it was really just a goal to see how good I could get. It always was kind of a simple goal, just work and see if I was ever going to be good enough for the PGA Tour. And if I hadn't made it, I would have known I gave it a shot. But I ended up making it and actually ended up having a good career. So it all worked out. During that early time when I was coaching the University of Maryland golf team from very end of 81 through 88, I qualified for a lot of U.S. Opens as a club pro and quite a few PGAs, and I kept playing pretty well in those and making cuts and even somewhat contended in one of them as a club pro. And I went, maybe I'm a little better than I thought I was. So I kept really working at it. And then finally I got out there, and I did lose my card my first year. I didn't keep it. I had to go back to Q school after the 89 season, but I got it right back, and I never had to go back to Q school again. So it was really a pretty blessed career, actually.
And 3 years later, in 1992, you had won your first tournament, the Shell Houston Open. What was it like to win it all for the first time?
Oh, that was unbelievable. That was a moment I wasn't sure I was ever going to have. It was a lot of pressure. I really wanted it. I was in position when I started the last round. I was leading, and I held on to the lead. I almost blew it on the last hole, but I got a little lucky and ended up winning by two over Kirk Triplett. But, that was a big deal. And then, really, the second victory was harder than the first because I wanted to prove the first one wasn't a fluke. So
right.
So I had to go out there and get another one. And then when I got that one, I started to believe in myself and believe that I belonged probably a year or two after that first win. In 93, 94, I got comfortable enough in my own skin to be out there playing on the PGA Tour, knowing that I'm good enough to play with these guys, and that was a big difference.
Going to 2005, you were 48 years old at the time, playing in 30-mile-per-hour winds, and yet you won the Players' Championship, becoming the oldest player to ever win it. Take me through that weekend, and how you were able to hold on for a close one-stroke lead.
Well, that was a weird year. We were playing in March, and that's the month that we're going to go back to starting next year. But the weather was really bad. We had so much rain that I had to play 32 holes on Monday. Woke up to crystal clear skies, but like you said, 30-mile-an-hour winds, brutal conditions, really high, rough. And it ended up playing into my favor because I was hitting my little pea shooter of a driver low and underneath the wind, and I was able to hit a lot of fairways and I hit a lot of greens. And it ended up being my advantage, or to my advantage, because of the long guys. And I was playing with Adam Scott and Vaughn Taylor. Adam's obviously really long. Vaughn's pretty long. And they were hitting their normal high trajectory off the tee, and the wind would blow it over into the rough, and they had no chance when they were in the rough. So it obviously worked out. That was my biggest win. The U.S. Senior Open was big. But that Players' Championship was something else because that's my hometown. I moved there in 89. It became my adopted hometown, and the tournament is, huge in stature. So that was really a real meaningful win. It was great.
We're talking with Fred Funk here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Fred, you mentioned about your driving skills. You know, some consider your career quite an anomaly because you're regarded as one of the shortest drivers on the tour, yet you're also the most accurate. In your mind, is accuracy more important for a golfer than driving the ball 300 yards?
No, but if you're not long, you better be straight. So the advantage is actually to be long. Statistically, it's a huge advantage. Accuracy didn't really mean that much, but I was long enough when I was hitting the ball solid. By any standards, it was still short, but it was long enough that I could play any golf course. And I was good around the greens and on the greens. So, I played a different kind of game. I couldn't overpower golf courses. It was more just getting it from point A to point B as accurately and as efficiently as I could.
Building off of that point, what's your advice for young golfers trying to fulfill their dreams of making the tour?
Swing hard, because right now the game's a power game. It's evolved into a game where if you don't have power, you don't have speed or length off the tee. It's too much of a disadvantage, I think, to overcome. That pretty much everybody now, no matter the size, stature, age, or anything, they're all long because of the way the equipment has evolved as well. So you got to be long. I got a son that's 22 trying to get out, and I told him when he was a little guy, I said, you swing hard and we'll figure out straight later.
Well, shifting gears to some current news, I know that you and your son Taylor golfed with President Trump earlier this year. What was that experience like, and is he as good of a golfer as he claims?
Yes, he is. He's very good. We had a great day. We had a phenomenal time. Obviously, he doesn't have a filter, so any conversation was really no boundaries. We could talk and ask him anything. So it was really an educational day. It was a fun day. He's a great guy. He's just a normal, fun guy to be around in a golf course setting. And as far as playing golf, he shot a legit 36 on the front nine, two birdies, two bogeys from the blue tees at Trump International. And he shot about 44 on the back, but you could tell his back was bothering him, but he never said anything about his back. He just kept plodding along and having a good time and telling stories. So it was a great day, and I wish that he would have the people see him in that setting and see how great a guy he is. But he actually is a great guy. He's I'll get backlash from this because over at least 50% of the people hate him, but I think he's doing a great job, and he's the right guy for the right times right now.
What were some of the stories that you guys talked about? Is there any specific one that comes to mind?
Well, there's a bunch. My son actually asked him a question whether he was worried about being assassinated, which was an interesting question. It came out of nowhere, and the president said, everybody that serves as the president of the United States is got that in the back of their mind. They're targets. And he says, if I die as president of the United States, then so be it. I've had a great life, but don't hurt my family. Just leave my family out of everything. I would say that 99% of every president would say that. So I don't think it's any different. It just goes with the territory, he says. But we talked a little bit about politics. We talked about Korea. We talked about things that we brought up. We talked about everything and just all the crap he has to deal with and how much Haiti deals with and what he's trying to do to truly help our country. And he loves our country. So I think it was a great day.
In more current news, you're now the host of Warm Up Wednesdays with Fred on PGAtour.com. What's this show all about, and how'd you get it started?
Well, I represent strikers. I had a knee replaced in 2009, so I'm one of the spokesmen and ambassadors for striker and joint replacement. And you know, one of the themes we had was Warm Up Wednesdays with Fred is basically simple little exercises you can do with bands and or the golf cart, whatever you want to do, to little simple things to help you get moving, get stretched out, get warmed up so you can go play the game of golf and not spend 5 or 6 holes just trying to get loose. So you can actually do it without going to the gym or just using things that, you know, little rubber tubing, stretch bands and a golf cart, if you usually have a golf cart. And little tricks where you can just do little rotational work and little movements so you get the muscles warmed up, ready to go.
You know, you mentioned Stryker, and you got a total knee replacement from them, then went out and won the U.S. Senior Open. So how did Stryker save your career?
Well, they did save my career. My knee was so bad. It was bone on bone. In 2008, I had my knee drained 18 times, got a staph infection from the needle on the 16th needle, and I was sicker than a dog for a while, and I ended up playing the 2009 season, and then at the end of that season I had enough. My knee was really bad, everything else was hurting. I was favoring my knee, made my hip and my back hurt, and I decided to get the knee replacement. And I knew 4 weeks after was replaced, the doctor said going out to the range and hit some balls, which I was shocked. And I went out there and I hit some wedges, and right away I knew my knee was not going to be an issue. I had my career back. So basically what I do is try to tell people to not wait till the last minute and be scared of it. Just get the information, get awareness, and talk to the doctor and just get an idea of what you need to go through and at what point is the right time to get it done. And usually it is the very last thing you do, but usually it's the last thing they do and they've already waited a couple of years and they've been suffering. So it's time to get out of that suffering and get your life back by learning about joint replacement, because they've gotten really good at it.
Well, Fred, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was a pleasure to have you on today.
You got it. Thanks.
What an honor it was to have Fred Funk on today's show. We talked about his amazing golfing career, his time spent with President Trump, and his partnership with Stryker Orthopedics. Spending the time today with Fred was really fun and informative, and I'm so happy that he took the time to be here on the show. At this time, let's move to the Announcer's Call of the Day segment. With Fred Funk being on the show today, let's go back to a great moment in his career, going to the 2014 Encompass Championship, where in the second round on hole 18, Funk was at 3 under par. What would happen next would be amazing. Let's listen in and see what Funk ends up doing.
Fred Funk playing his second shot at 18, his ninth hole of the day. Hole location kind of back left. Almost doesn't make any difference if the hole locations are over bunkers or not. The greens are soft enough. You can go flag hunting just like that. Great shot by Fred. 2.
How about that? An eagle 2 for Fred Funk at 18.
What a shot there by Fred Funk. And again, a special thank you to him for coming on today's show. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Chi Talk Sports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, and on Twitter at John Z Sports. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find the subscription box on the homepage. Simply type in your email click yes on the confirmation email, and you'll be subscribed. From there, any new article or podcast will go directly to your email. And finally, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago and find us. Make sure to leave a 5-star rating and write a review if you'd like. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you again for listening to today's show, and have a great day.